We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hello folks, Colm Kelly here from RotoViz Overtime, a podcast I host along with Sean Siegel. And in just a little moment, we'll jump straight into the podcast. Before we do so, I want to let you know, as a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% off a RotoViz NFL pass right now on the RotoViz.com website. It gives you access to all of our content and tools. All you have to do is add the code 2020RVRadio at checkout or by going to RotoViz.com/podcast for more information. And of course, while you're listening to the podcast on the network, helps us out a lot if you can rate and review on your favorite podcast app. I really do appreciate that. As I mentioned at the start, RotoViz Overtime with Sean Siegel twice a week. If you haven't already checked it out, be sure to do so after this show. But let's get straight into it. Enjoy the podcast.
Joining me this week, the first high-stakes lowdown on RotoViz of the 2020 NFL season after it starts. It's the third-place team owner in the 2020 Football Guys Players Championship, Mr. Chris Birchby. Chris, welcome back to the show, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, great to have me. It's funny hearing you. Third place so early, you know, in the season, but I'll take that victory lap because it's, you know, in this season is so different from any other as far as the amount of information you know beforehand. So, you know, some have been hits, some have been huge misses. It's just fun to, you know, feel like you're in contention on something.
Yeah, I always say that too to anybody who's at the top of the leaderboard early in the season. You know, at least you're there. You know, it's and it's easier to protect that than it is to get up there. So congratulations to you. You did a lot of drafts this summer. The main event, the FPC. I'm just kind of curious, drafting all over the board, did you end up having a favorite spot or a favorite draft slot this season where you felt really dialed in at that spot when you're drafting from there?
You know, I never really settled on one spot this year. I think there's so many different benefits for all. Historically, I've always liked the middle rounds. And Fantasy Mojo had something out last year. I remember on Twitter, he was looking at, I think, winners, and maybe it was historical year-over-year winners. I think there was a higher preponderance of teams coming from the middle spots. And I would argue that that is kind of like the one spot that an experienced drafter, you know, and by that I mean somebody who's paying attention to everything from, you know, ADP to daily news and, you know, can try to just, you know, find the edges in that. You know, you have more stuff that falls in the middle than on the edges. You know, on the edges, you always have to reach a little bit more. And so if you're on a softer draft, which always happens as you get closer to the season, you know, middle's a kind of a prime spot, just because you have the opportunity to access more value. You know, that said, this year, like, I loved, you know, I always felt really comfortable with two RB start teams, although, of course, you know, some teams that started You get two wide receivers like Parker and I think like Julio, or there was a couple that were you were stacking there that we obviously make really great starts after week one. But starting in the beginning or the end of the draft actually felt pretty good too. But I guess, I love the middle as well. So it really all depends. You just have to be super flexible. It's like that old Bruce Lee kind of saying, and I'll totally bastardize it, but I think it's about water. It takes the shape of any vessel, So if you're pouring it, it's a cup, you're a cup, a teapot, a crack, being able to, find value. And I will say, there are times when you jump on value, at least like what I like to do is stacking. And that's the only time when you start like seeing the texture of the board develop and realize, opportunities based on ADP where you can kind of see things in a couple rounds. Other than that, it's taking whatever the rounds give you.
Yeah. And two, when you're drafting in the middle, you got value coming to you both ways, which you don't have on the end. You sort of have to get your target there, whether it's a reach or not, and then maybe scoop up value with one of the other picks, but you don't really have the luxury of it coming to you either way, which you do in the middle, and taking advantage of that. Let's get into specifically this draft, this third place team that is sitting near the top of the leaderboard of the FPC. At the 310, you had Jonathan Taylor at your disposal. Le'Veon Bell was there, James Conner, all popular picks at the end of the third round. Why did you choose David Johnson there? And I'll preface this by saying, David Johnson impressed a lot of people who did not expect to be impressed by David Johnson in that opening game against Kansas City. Why was David Johnson the choice there? What did you see in him?
I'll tell you, there's a couple things. One relates to the player, and two, actually the format of the draft, I guess. And so the one, as far as you look at when you're drafting, at least I do, talent and opportunity and coach's intention. And in this case, Bill O'Brien is so committed to David Johnson after letting, beloved Hopkins go. He will be a Hall of Famer. Obviously, he's so good. And what he got in return is so ridiculous that from a professional keep your job level, he's incentivized to have Hopkins way outperform expectations. Same thing with Cooks. And have good seasons. So, you just know the opportunity is going to be there. And, Johnson, obviously, he's been great in the past. People talk about him being stiff last year. I'm not a huge tape guy, so I can't speak to that as much. But, I will say, just like why I loved, I believed in Gurley a lot more than a lot of other drafters. It's just opportunity with target share and what they gave up for him and, the fact that there's very little behind him, although he'll – is the guy. That's kind of why I was more high on David Johnson and had higher than kind of average share of him across my teams. I would also, it's that Thursday night game is a free piece in a large tournament format for the year. So this year, especially with, having the Chiefs and the Texans play, you have two good offenses, one the best offense, and you have an opportunity to get a free look at how they might perform and or, get injured or, you just don't know. But it is, especially in a year that might be a shortened year, having the opportunity for a free look at their game and play or sit, accordingly. Is so undervalued. And I thought this year especially. And so, whenever I had a deciding factor this year in drafts, Chiefs and Texans, definitely I jump up a little bit.
Let's keep talking about running backs here, because I think that, obviously with waivers being processed this week, there's a lot of, running backs out there that I think people are interested in as far as what they could be going forward for the rest of the season. And we only have 1 week of information here. We don't know what's real and what's not, but what was real in week one for the Los Angeles Rams backfield was Malcolm Brown. He looked great. Is that performance what we saw there? Is that something that you think is going to continue going forward? Or is it just a matter of time before the cream rises to the top, Cam Akers takes over that backfield, a guy you took at the 603 in this draft?
Yeah, I would always say it's a matter of time until the cream rises to the top, especially a rookie, you know, that has high, you know, draft value in a backfield that seemed wide open. I mean, I loved, I love Henderson's college metrics and was very high on him as well. And I had always considered Malcolm Brown, you know, just a guy. And then actually today I saw on Twitter, somebody was posting his 2011, you know, out of high school comps. And I didn't realize, you know, at the time he was, cause he went to Texas where, you know, he was like a Jag plus, it seemed like, but he was the top 5-star running back.
Chris, did I lose you?
And, is he like the, you know, that's the Devontae Parker, maybe Corey Davis this year, kind of, you know, late bloomer getting it together. I mean, there was word. I remember, like, I definitely was betting on Akers and even Henderson to a degree before the draft. I mean, before the season started, it's a surprise, but, I learned that today on Twitter. I had no idea he was such a stud in high school. He was a 5-star running back, the top in his class in 2011, went to Texas, you know, where he was, you know, I thought more of just a guy, but, he's got it in him. And obviously Sean McVay keeps on talking about a committee. And after that performance, I don't see why he wouldn't continue it, just because it gives their team, you know, more stability and continuity, and they can keep on working in Akers and Henderson. And I just think it's a situation to avoid for all of them at this point. Nobody's going to be consistent until maybe later in the season. But even then, again, you've got two great athletic talents and Malcolm Brown, who Twitter told me today is also a great athletic, you know, dude. So yeah, who knows? I'm nervous about the whole bunch.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's best to avoid. And I know some people did that in their drafts. They just stayed away from the Rams backfield. I'm sure you did the same in some of your drafts too, where you just, you know, said to heck with it and concentrate on different guys for sure. Speaking of team construction, in this draft that, or this league that you're in third place in the FPC, you skipped tight end until the 9th round. Then you went 3 of them in a row: Jonnu Smith, Dallas Goedert, Ian Thomas. How often do you employ that type of strategy in tight end premium leagues like the FFPC main event, like the Football Guys Players Championship, where you skip out on the elite ones, but then you stack a bunch in the middle?
This year worked so good with stacking 3 in a row. And I found myself often going for Kelce, Kittle, Andrews, or waiting until you come in with kind of some sort of like fan. I loved Herndon. I have really overweight my shares of him, and I hope that works out. Again, that's another like, you know, opportunity and talent situation. He's a guy that I would definitely bet on a lot more before the season. Ebron, yeah, there was a whole, I stayed away from Hooper, but yeah, you know, there seemed to be, you could get, you know, 3 guys. Goddard, I loved getting him because he's also, you know, a league and or tournament winner. And, you know, if Ertz ever went down the lack of preseason kept on going forward, and it seemed like their wide receiver core was so decimated that there was just a real, again, opportunity there, and he really showed his talent last year. But it just seemed like there was a great place to kind of stack 3 in a row, and you're really just hoping to get the upside variance that one of them is going to hit. And you give yourself 3 good shots of, you know, good offense, good talent, good opportunity, and hope you get lucky. And this year, in the past, I felt like you'd get by with 2 tight ends, but given COVID potential issues, and also just kind of more of not knowing how everyone's going to perform, I ended up going 3 tight ends and 2 quarterbacks, where usually I'll just go 1 quarterback and 2 tight ends and then just, you know, take extra shots at running back. But this year it was a little more conservative.
Yeah, and I get it. And I think we all kind of adjusted our drafting strategies a little bit in this, you know, sort of, you know, novel year, for lack of a better term. It's just been crazy. And I think it's going to be fun going forward. I think it's also going to be challenging to try to win fantasy football leagues this year, which always makes it, in my opinion, more fun. One of the challenges that presented owners was trying to, you know, you always want to get a piece of the elite passing attacks, but you also want to get the right pieces. And I feel like in a lot of drafts, Chris, and this has been my experience, that Mecole Hardman went several, not just a couple, but several rounds ahead of Sammy Watkins. And then we see on Thursday night, Hardman gets the, whatever it was, one catch. You saw DeMarcus Robinson, quite frankly, involved more in that offense than Hardman was. But Sammy Watkins, 2 years in a row, a big season opener for Kansas City. Do you think Mecole Hardman got overdrafted? You know, after, again, only 1 week of information, but it was pretty significant. And was Watkins slipping too far in drafts, in your opinion, as far as what you saw with the FFPC?
And, you know, for me, it seemed like Hardman, I faded him all summer, and then I started convincing myself of his upside the last week. And it was, you know, he's a handcuff for Tyreek Hill. You could talk yourself into. And you can talk yourself into, I mean, he has such speed and separation, and, you know, you can see him being, you know, maybe there's like a 1A, 1B that develops. But the thing is, you know, Watkins, he's 26, 27. I mean, he's such a talent, and, you know, he's been injured. He has a lot of things against him, but, you know, if he's healthy, they gave him a big contract. The coach and the organization invested in him. He has the talent. He has the opportunities, the best offense in the league. I mean, it's all there, for him to be a breakout player and somebody who really kind of can finally reach his potential. So, I was overweight in Watkins, and obviously it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that he was on that Thursday night slate. So again, you get a free look at him. You know, so it was such a great feeling going through and plugging him in, because I didn't have him starting in any of my teams, but, you know, plugging in that 21 plus points right into your team. I probably am about, you know, 35% of my teams. I was able to do that, and it was awesome. I think Hardman, I have him on some of my dynasty teams, and I'm hopeful for him for the future. But it's tough to see a road after week one for him being of value unless Hill has an issue.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that too, for sure. Speaking of receivers, 15-10 pick in this draft looked really good, and in his debut with a new team, and he's a guy that I for whatever reason, did not get. I got him in like two or three leagues. But the rest of mine, I am Robbie Anderson-less. You look at the numbers he put up week one. You think he's a top 35 receiver the rest of the way, or is it still too early to make that call?
You know, I hated him all draft season. He's another guy on one of my high-stakes dynasty teams. I dropped on waiver wire as week one, you know, embarrassingly enough. I was not high on his placement here, and I think I might be wrong, but it's still early week one. I totally think the targets are going to balance out a lot more, with, DJ Moore and McCaffrey. And so, as much as I like Anderson as a player and I hope that he finds success, I just didn't think that was the right fit for him to be a big fantasy contributor. And I still don't. But he might totally prove me wrong. I know Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know what the exact statistics were, but he was above average for deep throws in game one relative to other quarterbacks, which is not how his style has kind of seemingly dictated in the past. So if he does go downfield more, then obviously Robbie Anderson is going to be a huge value.
Yeah, absolutely. He is, no question. And that's, I mean, something we're going to be watching for. That NFC South with New Orleans and Atlanta and Tampa, I think is going to be one of the most fun divisions to watch this year with all the playmakers you have on both offensive sides of the ball. A playmaker in his prime, maybe not anymore, was Le'Veon Bell. He's going to miss the next 3 weeks as he was placed on an injured reserve. Frank Gore has been announced by Adam Gase as the starter. You think he's a flex play this week in FFPC leagues, given that, you know, they still have Kalen, right there, they got Kalen Ballage there. They have Josh Adams there as well as a potential pass catcher. Frank Gore is a flex this week. Yay or nay? What do you say, Chris?
You're answering that, and how you finished the question there. There's so many other players. I know the Gays came out and said Gore was the starter, but even if he truly was the starter, if I knew going into the game that he was going to absolutely be the starter, I can't imagine a scenario playing him in any of the teams right now at this point in the season. I mean, you hope your team has better options than Frank Gore. All power to Frank Gore for being 37 years old and starting for the New York Jets. That's awesome.
Yeah, that part really is truly awesome. I'm not, you know, maybe he was drafted at age 13, and this is how he was able to just this create this hugely successful long career. You talk about Hall of Famers, and Frank Gore doesn't even think of that because he probably doesn't want to retire for another decade or so. So kudos to him. We'll be excited to see if he can keep it up with an extended role in New York.
Speaking of LeBron, his son is one of his sons is in college.
That's right,
running back.
I mean, and maybe that's what it is. Maybe he's just hanging on to potentially play on the same team or at least at the same time as his son. His son, I don't think he wasn't like a blue chip guy, if I remember correctly. So I don't know what his NFL future is like, but maybe Gore wants to find out, and we'll see what happens going forward. Injuries, you know, it wasn't just Le'Veon Bell this week. It happened in New Orleans too. Michael Thomas is going to be out at least for the foreseeable future here with New Orleans. Tre'Quan Smith, is he a sneaky start against the Raiders on Monday Night Football this week, or is it just too dicey given what we've seen from him so far in his career?
I mean, I've been waiting forever for him to break out again. Talent, opportunity, winning offense, you know, I hope he does. I hope this is an opportunity for him to break out. It's still, you know, and he also provides youth in that offense where it's like, you know, with Cook and Sanders, you know, outside of running back. And so I would start him if I had to, and by have to, like, he'd be that, like, final decision. If I was on a team, I did put in for waivers for him on a bunch of teams this week. He wasn't my highest priority because I do think that he will be a, you know, 2 week plug in. And at this point in the season, there's not that much of that, but there is the upside. If he is a plug in and he does pop, well, then he can really start pushing for time, opposite from Thomas. And that's where it gets exciting. As much as I do want to see that, I don't think that that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, we've seen a lot from Tre'Quan Smith so far this season, or not this season, but throughout his career, and I think we've formed opinions about him. We've also seen a lot of Emmanuel Sanders, and we know what he's capable of, especially given that he's a veteran, Drew Brees is a veteran. These guys are going to be professionals about it. It could be Sanders be the biggest beneficiary of this Thomas absence, or maybe Kamara gets even more involved in the passing game too. New Orleans is going to be fun to watch against Vegas on Monday night this week. James Conner, when he does come back, if it is this week, I don't know what's going to happen, but when he does come back, given what Benny Snell did against the Giants on Monday, Chris, do you think that Connor's going to be close to a 50-50 timeshare in Pittsburgh because Snell looked really good. And you know, one of the things, and you play Dynasty, so you know this, one of the things that was a knock on Snell was that, you know, he was a big guy but didn't necessarily have that one-cut ability, didn't have that speed. I think he showed some pretty good cutting ability, and he showed some pretty good speed. He looked spry. He looked fast, I mean, quite frankly. And I don't know if that's an indictment of the Giants' defense or not, or maybe it's a combination. But Snell looked really good, and I wonder what Connor's workload is going to be like when he gets healthy enough to play again.
Yeah, because the coaching staff was really, you know, firm that Connor was going to be like, you know, three down back, and that was like the news right before the season started. Oh no, he's our guy. And first, I mean, you have to root for Connor too, given, you know, what he's overcome, and you know that, you know, his preseason back tweet photo that was out there that, yeah, the dude's obviously in great shape. But I do worry that when he comes back, you know, at least he's lost a percentage of his share. How big, you know, to be determined, but you have to assume he's lost a percent. And, you know, even if he loses 10%, you know, does it take him out? I don't think it takes him out. You know, it doesn't take him out of any lineups, frankly. So He's lost something, and I think that they're going to go to slightly more balanced. I mean, it's just not sustainable for any team to really have such a big bell cow. It was inevitable, and maybe Snell just locked up number two.
And it always helps too when your running back looks as good as he did, like Snell, and you get a win. And I think that plays into coaches' mindsets too when they look at how to distribute touches going forward. By the time everybody's hearing this, Chris, waivers will have processed in the FFPC. I'm just kind of curious if you had a big name target that you tried to place a lot of bids on in your leagues this week, or a favorite target, or maybe a couple of favorite targets of players you're trying to acquire.
It really wasn't. Maybe Logan Thomas. I was too late to the game on him, even though I kept on seeing again, opportunity. In that offense, especially, where they've just had nobody. I mean, was a screaming buy that I did not invest enough in. And so, I had invested a lot in Tyler Eifert. Again, I saw him as a guy who has been able, he's performed, they lacked, targets, and, maybe he's healthy. And you're just betting on, it's not even a big bet. It's like, okay, he's healthy. He's going to put together a season. He's a big red zone target, and they're lacking targets. But after week one, I did pivot. And so it'll be interesting to see. I was giving him a lot of kind of effort for Logan. But it was just a lot of cleanup. So it's like, what it was I decided I was cutting ties on somebody like Mims. There was what's his name? Lynn. I'm totally spacing. Who? From Raiders to the Dolphins. Lynn Bowden.
Oh, Lynn Bowden.
He's a guy that I love the upside opportunity. I like the idea of Wildcat he's not easy to get in any league, but LaVisca, on the Jaguars. He's actually that guy. He's the receiver who can run, and they'd even talked about Mike Wildcat. So, he's somebody who I was trying to, in the very first waivers, he was actually available in a couple teams. And, I was willing to go 50% almost of my fab, just, lock him up right now. Who knows what's happening at running back, wide receiver, et cetera, in that offense. He's a huge talent, huge opportunity. They love him. They talked him up as like he would have been a one or two wide receiver for them last year if he came out. And so you just see the path there very clearly to him being an interesting piece, especially by end of season. So for me it was just a lot of cleanup. I did put in for a bunch of the wide receivers, MVS, just a couple of the guys that might gauge, that might have some opportunities. But again, it was just trimming the slimmest of fat off. Because I did go in really big last week on James Robinson, and I was able to get him in a bunch of leagues, including in like four or five of bigger dynasty leagues where I desperately needed running back. And so for me, it fab always comes down to balancing home life and fantasy football life. And some weeks when I have the time to do fab, and I've got guys that I want, I'll figure out kind of where the average winning bid will be, and I will go better than that because I don't want to have to come back and do fab next week.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, exactly. Just curiously, what were you bidding on James Robinson last week in the leagues that you won him at? I mean, are we talking like $300-$400? Was it more? Was it less?
Yeah, 400 plus. I was okay. 400 minimum, I think, is where I was coming in for him, even in the 500s in Dynasty.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that was one of the names that the Jaguars front office and coaching staff mentioned after the release of Leonard Fournette. And, why it was palatable, why they could handle it, because the gap between Fournette and Robinson wasn't that big. So it'll be interesting to see what Robinson does the remainder of the season. Chris, I have one final question before I let you go and split up your time between hanging out with your family and setting your week two lineups. Excuse me. A sleeper that you think needs to be in high stakes lineups for his matchup this week. And then conversely, a guy that a lot of people are going to start, but probably going to be disappointed with.
I'll go with Laviska Shenault just because I had already mentioned him and I'm high on him. Yeah, I'm excited to see what else he does. You know, they gave him limited touches relative, and he did very well week one. And I just think that's a trend that's going to continue on the upside, especially, you know, as they're looking towards the future and rebuild there. I mean, yeah, see what they have. pardon me, Marquise Brown. I mean, he's not like an underrated guy, but it just, as I've looked at kind of some predicted point totals for this week, I just feel like whatever metrics people are using are coming in low on him. And he was 5 of 6 for over 100 yards, 101 in week one. And, you know, healthy, bigger, the clear wide receiver one on that team that is one of the top two offenses. I don't see how you can't be really enthusiastic about anybody on that team. You know, even Dobbins and Ingram. I think Ingram's in for bounce back week, and Dobbins are actually, it's, you know, I've got a lot more Dobbins than Ingram because I was planning for late in the season and the value there when I was drafting. I just think that, you know, anybody there is exciting. As far as guys that might be a bust, not that he's a bust, but Jameson Crowder, again, he's a huge opportunity guy, but he's historically got such a low, like, 8-dot, and, you know, touchdown. He's, you know, he had a long touchdown, and there's got to be regression, and then just that offense sucks. And I'm guessing in bad offenses. And so, you know, somebody from that, and also any of the Buffalo running backs. I have very little of either of them this year. I just am trying to stay away on the teams that even I have them. I don't even know what I'm doing with them. So right now they're just sitting on my bench in almost every league I can.
It's so funny about the Dobbins thing. It's one of the more bittersweet games of, you know, I've seen in my recent fantasy career. You know, I own Dobbins in several leagues, and you know, week one, everybody's basically healthy. Nobody's on bye. I didn't start him because I had better options. And then what does he do? Goes out and gets 2 touchdowns, which is great for, you know, the future. But, man, it would have been nice to bank those touchdowns in my starting lineup. Such is life and such is fantasy as we go through this journey each and every year. Chris, you are doing it much better than me right now. 3rd place overall in the Football Guys Players Championship. Congratulations on this success that you've had earlier in the season. I'm sure it's going to continue. Good luck in all your leagues the rest of the way, man. Thank you so much for joining me this week, and we will talk to you again soon.
Eric, thanks so much for having me. It's always, you know, this is a lot of fun just to talk fantasy football and, you know, escape life and everything else for, you know, this hour or so. So I appreciate the opportunity as always, and look forward to talking to you again. Thank you very much.
Awesome, dude. This is perfect. I'm going to mix this down, send these files into RotoViz. They'll publish it Thursday sometime, probably in the morning, and I'm going to send you a link to it as soon as it's out there.
Thanks so much. Really,
you're the man.
A lot of fun. I appreciate it. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Get back to Dino Trucks now.
Yeah, I'm actually right back.
All right, dude.
I know you know all that very well, so.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know how it goes. I definitely know how it goes. So, I will, you know, we'll see what happens. I know you got a lot of skin in the game in the main event too. So we'll see if you climb up the leaderboard there as well.
I have a bunch of teams I feel good about. Yeah, when I look at my ownership percentages, I really shifted, and I knew I was doing it, but I wasn't sure how much. From going a really heavy, like, running back wide receiver build to start to in the main events, just really leaning into Lamar Jackson a ton. I mean, I think I have 40 main events, and I have him in 35% of them.
And oh, my goodness.
I have a ton of, you know, him and Andrew Stacks, or I would try to, you know, try to get Marquise Brown, even though it was kind of an odd way he'd usually go kind of towards that 5-6 turn, and you had to either grab him early at 5 or you have him fall to you at 6, or pair with Dobbins or Ingram and build and Justin Tucker. I have a ton of stacks with Justin Tucker too. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. That's kind of where I've invested in the heaviest with it, but you know, we'll see. I think I've got a fourth, third, and second over in the last like 4 years, whether 3 years. I had second and fourth last year in the main event. And
mm-hmm. Yep.
It was like a third or fourth a couple of years ago. Hubbard was right next to me. But no, maybe Hubbard won it that year. That's right.
Yeah, 2016 he did. Him and Nelson won the main in 2016. I remember that. Yeah, he actually he and Chad Schroeder did. I mean, I think they played a little bit in the main event this year, but they obviously did not get as many teams as they normally do in it. So it'll be a wild wild west, which is the way I know everybody likes it.
I really don't think it's going to be such a crazy year anymore, as you know. Obviously, everyone thought in the beginning COVID related, how that's going to affect, and you know, everyone, you know, temperatures right before game, and then all of a sudden you're losing your starting quarterback, and you better have a backup because you know otherwise that's 20 points in the drain for the season. And you know, it's just the way things are going as far as how they've been able to test well, which is seemingly impossible. I mean, it's great, but it seems like it's not going to be as much of an issue. So, I mean, we will see how it goes, but the more and more it's looking normaler and normaler relative to what I thought it would be. And I think everyone.
Yeah. It's always good too. Like when like the big storylines after the week is not about, oh my goodness, look at all these positive COVID cases. It's, oh my goodness, how can we, it's so weird playing in stadiums with no fans, you know, which granted is not the most ideal situation for the players. But I'd take that over a rash of you know, positive tests or anything like that. So it's been good so far. And I think that's kind of, you know, I was talking with Dave Grzak about this too. And he's kind of thinking the same way as you. He's nervous at the start to see how it goes. But as time goes on and you know, we're seeing all these protocols implemented properly, it's, you know, they might get through this whole season with, you know, maybe not as good as the NBA did, but good enough, you know.
Oh, definitely good enough. You know, at the very least, you know, I am 100% positive we're getting six games in, right? You know, which is the minimum for
right. Yep.
To get there. And, you know, which even in the beginning, I was like, oh, you know, that's not even a question. And I think 95% they're making it through the entire season. You know, granted, will there be games missed? Maybe, but you know, it's just the season's happening. Postseason's going to happen. You know, there will be whole thing, and I think that, you know, the studs are studs, and it's not so much on the waivers so much. So yeah, I have just been spending it. And part of that, really, I mean, it truly, I cannot spend the time to manage 100 teams, even though I love the software and everything, you know,
right?
And you know, I'm still running our company, so it's like, you know, all of this time that I'm doing this is just like total time suck from something else. I can only have so much each week. With you know, two and 4 year old, and you know,
yeah.
So I hope that, you know, and when I do make my waiver bets, you know, it's like you just place a bet and if I get to this team this week, I get to this team, and you know, it's the best I can do, because you just never know.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. at hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.